All right, we are here. We are Galexy Sound. Welcome. We have established a vortex for your benefit so that you may release anything you don't want, so that you may also inform your reality of anything that you do wish to have in your life. It is our pleasure to speak with you, to see your light, to touch you, to have the opportunity to share with you some important information, but more than that, to love and heal with you. There's always more to heal, healing being the lifting of vibration from a more limited place to a more expansive, light-free, joyous, loving, and empowered place. Today we speak on negative psychic contracts and the importance of breaking them. Now, a negative psychic contract, and we emphasize the word negative, not in the sense of a polarity, such as a feminine masculine polarity or an electric polarity, negative positive, because that is in true natural balance. And actually, in that context, negative is a good thing. When we talk about negative, we mainly are referring to that which is limiting to you, which limits and restrains and restricts the expression of your soul, of your spirit, of your being, that restricts the freedom of your life, that in a sense restricts your empowerment and expression of that power through your choice of actions, through your successes, through your experiments. You want to be free to experiment, to explore, to become more than you have been, to continuously expand your field of radiance, to expand your awareness of who you are. But of course, when you were born, you came into this life helpless, powerless, vulnerable. Even though before you came, you knew what themes you wanted to explore, what lessons, quote unquote, we put that in quotes because they're not really lessons, but what themes you wanted to explore, what lessons you wanted to learn, what you wanted to get out of this life. And also, what options you wanted to have to put your light, your energy, your love into this reality, into this world. Now, when you got on your spiritual path, you discovered that it was all about letting go of the past, letting go of the limited you, letting go of the dark parts of you, and opening to the light within you. Indeed, the spiritual path is your connection with the divine within you, and the divine beyond you. So, of course, knowing this on the other side before you came into this life, it was a shock for you. Yes, you knew you were going to be powerless and helpless. You chose your parents. They had just the right stuff to enable you to deal with those themes, those issues, those dynamics you wanted to explore. They had just the right social, racial energies, DNA, historical lineage, geographical area. They had just the right stuff for you to get the optimal experience that you wanted. But when you arrived helpless and vulnerable, you discovered that you had to rely on whoever it was, parent or guardian, who was going to take care of you to make sure you survived. Because by yourself, you were not capable of surviving. What a funny picture it is of a baby trying to go to work, right? Driving a car, banking. All of those adult things that are part of your survival in our civilization. And being that a child can't do it, and the child is fully in a psychic mode, fully receptive, because the child's got to really drink in everything and learn it. First of all, the child's got to drink in the parent's view of the world, to give the child some kind of boundaries initially, some kind of perspective with which to orient, with which to focus, with which to direct personal development. If you don't have any boundaries, you have no perspective. There's nothing to move in reference to. So you absorbed all the ideas, the beliefs, the attitudes, the orientation of your parents, and subsequently also of the culture, of the religion, or of the philosophical perspective of your parents, of your family, of parents or guardians. And so from those boundaries, you began to have an orientation that could give you an idea of whether you're growing, learning, expanding, or what. And you had parents who, and perhaps older siblings, who could walk and talk and do all those kinds of human things that you could pattern after. That you could discover how to walk, how to talk yourself. It's part of the natural energy grid, frequency grid, around the planet for human development. You tune into this grid. It's like a psychic force field. It's a grid made out of fibers of light going in three dimensions, length, width, and depth, so that you could function in 3D. You, the being that you were prior to coming into this lifetime, did not have such a limitation. You were existing outside of, beyond of, time and space. So coming into this reality was extraordinarily limiting. Nevertheless, there are parts of you, an aspect of you, who knew who you were for a while. Yeah, it was kind of drummed out of you. You took on the identity of your parents. I am of this race. I am of this gender. And that means that I must act like this. I am of this culture. I am of this geographical area. I am of this neighborhood. I am of this community. This is my identity. I am the child of these parents. I am belong to this family. I am part of this society. When you start to really get that, and it's important that you do, it's part of your development, you do lose the connection to the extraordinary psychic self that you were. It limits your perceptions along the lines of your social group. You begin to perceive along those lines. Now, if you're fortunate, you remembered a little bit more than the others, and perhaps you had some unusual experiences. Perhaps you were very aware. Some of you were very aware. Some of you were wise as infants, as young children, and watching the drama unfold of the physical plane, all the emotions, all the mental stuff, all the conversations that were not really what people were feeling, but what people thought they should say, all the facades, all the games that people played with each other. You didn't really know what to do with that. You knew that something wasn't right about it. And you also knew that somehow or another you had to learn how to do this yourself. But it was in conflict with who you perceived yourself as being. And you had to let it go at some point. You had to let that greater identity go. But from that perspective, that carried a thread all the way through. There's a part of you that is still connected to that wise place you were when you were born. If you ever look into a baby's eyes, have you ever noticed the wisdom that's there? They're like little Buddhas. There's no neurosis, you know? They're not in anxiety. They're not worrying. They're looking at life wholly, openly, in the oneness. Some of that has remained. You still have it because it's part of you. So somewhere along the line in growing up, you made a deliberate choice out of the greatness of you, deliberately to choose to limit yourself. And you did it often out of love, which for you registered as survival. If you didn't get enough attention, or if you didn't get enough love, you knew you wouldn't make it. You wouldn't survive. Survival is based on energy exchange. So you realized that in certain areas of your parents' life or your life, that there were lacks. There were places that weren't right. They were out of balance. And you tried your best to balance it. Many times you thought it was your fault that it was out of balance. That somehow or another you hadn't learned what you needed to learn good enough. Or that you weren't making your parents happy enough. Or pleasing them enough. Or somehow being the right person. Somehow the person that you think that they must have really wanted you to be. So in the process of adjusting to this, in the process of trying to make a sense of harmony exist in your household, you took on emotional, mental, psychic debris. You took it on. An example we can make is the one of the channels, that her mother was a bit moody, could be manic depressive. Sometimes she was up, really, life is great, fun. And sometimes she was really down, as feeling guilt, shame, despair, feeling rejected, lonely. Even in a marriage with a decent, good man. So somewhere around the age of 5, the channel said, you know, somehow or another, it seems that if I misbehave, it makes my mother unhappy. She seems to be unhappy. She seems to need love. She needs a support. She needs to be bolstered. And if she's in a good mood, hey, then my life is good. We can have fun. When she's in a bad mood, then I get punished for it. I get, you know, she gets on my case and I have to, she starts focusing a lot on me and I have to do everything just right. And so I'm going to support her. I'm going to take on some of her stuff. I'm going to carry some of her stuff for her. And that will lighten her burden and she'll feel happier. And so around age 5, she began to take on her mother's stuff. Well, it ended up that she ended up having the emotional problems of her mother. Surprise, right? Fortunately, her mother was very healthy, so it wasn't a physical debility that she had to pick up. But sometimes as a child, you pick up the stress or tension between the parents. For example, the channel worked with a woman who had a daughter who developed a rare blood disease around age 1 or age 2. This rare blood disease was developed just at the time that mother and father were not getting along and kind of breaking up and coming back together and breaking up, arguing a lot. There was a lot of stress, a lot of tension in the family. And what they figured out, looking at the situation, is that every time it got really, really intense and unpleasant and he ran away after an argument, the child would get worse. And then the child would get in this bad situation, have to go to the hospital, and then the father would show up and the father and the mother would stop focusing on their own battles and focus on the child. That blood disease was the child's way of getting them to come together in harmony. When both parents realized this, and they made an effort to be harmonious in their dealings with each other, amazingly, this rare and terrible blood disease disappeared. It was no longer needed to create that harmony. It was the sacrifice the child was willing to make. And this was at the age of 1.5 or 2. So it can start very early. This is the beginning of, and this is the foundation of, a psychic contract with a parent. It's, I will be this way. I will take on your stuff. I will do what's necessary to bring harmony. And if necessary, I'll get out of the way. If you need to learn about love, I will get ill and you will learn about love. Some children come in with Down's syndrome. They're love bunnies. They can't function too well in the quote-unquote real world. But very often, their parents, suffering over the whole dilemma of having to take care of them all their lives, also discover that they love them, that there's so much love that they can offer and give so much love. So a psychic contract, in essence, is the choice to sacrifice something of yours in order to have a benefit for someone else. If there is an agreement that is made underneath the surface, subconsciously, it's an agreement of the soul, deep in the emotional body. I will suffer so that this positive can happen. Now, not all psychic contracts are with parents. They can also be with siblings. I am going to fail so that you can succeed. I am going to work hard and take care of you so that I can be valuable. There's all sorts of ideas here. I will take care of this. I will step forward and I will make the sacrifice. It becomes even more complex when you get older and you go into a personal, romantic, or love relationship. Sometimes these psychic contracts are between a husband and wife, between lovers, as soon as there's a commitment to mate, there can also be some kind of arrangement made. Because sometimes people coming together don't come together strictly out of the love of each other's souls. But they can see also that somehow they can enable the other person or be enabled by the other person. So sometimes these contractual agreements are, I'm going to be the strong one and I'll take care of you. That way I'm going to be necessary. I'm going to be needed. That way I won't be abandoned. So we'll have a contract that you will always need me. Another person will say, okay, and I will get everything I need from the position of weakness. I will manipulate you for it. That way, I will feel finally that I can be taken care of. I can be nurtured and I can be loved that way. These are painful for both people because it leads into a tremendously dire codependency, where certain topics can't even be reached, where people have to tiptoe around each other, placate each other, sacrifice and adjust to each other. A psychic contract is an arrangement. It is made, and you made some, by the individual. It is not always reciprocated. For example, when the channel took on her mother's stuff at age 5, she assumed that her mother would be loving to her and supportive of her in return and be fun. And it didn't turn out that mother would do that. Because from mother's point of view, she didn't acknowledge this quote-unquote contract, this quote-unquote agreement. And instead, she was just went ahead and was even more narcissistic and more controlling. It got so bad that if mother ever got ill, the channel would get ill with it. Channel would pick up her health issues, pick up her emotional stuff. Had to spend years dismantling emotional stuff before she even found this arrangement, this agreement. In fact, she didn't finally clear it until her mother was 95. They were always, I'm always having to give too much. I'm always having to go extend myself and never be appreciated for it, and to kind of avoid conflict, and I'm always having to give. Didn't really understand that and take on all this stuff. Finally, she said, look, I'm tired of doing that, and I don't need to do it anymore. Look, you take care of your stuff, she said psychically to her mother. And her mother finally was able to let go and die, which is, in a sense, the mother was wanting to go. Very often, these psychic contracts will hold somebody on the physical plane. No, you must be here. I need you here. Even if you're in pain, even if you're damaged, I got to have you. And sometimes people will stay long past the time of their departure from this life just because they need to finish with someone. But you don't want to wait until your deathbed for you to clear any contracts that you have, to clear these agreements. Because for some people, it means hanging on for years before they feel clear, before they feel permission to be free of the agreement that they made. I don't want to leave you. I don't want to hurt you. So I will stay, even though it's, I don't want to be here. I want to go, but for your sake, I will stay. and I'll suffer, but I will stay. So you can see that even though the initial idea of a psychic contract may seem to come from love, may seem to come from a sense of let us have happiness and bliss and harmony and love and so on. It's generally around love somewhere. It doesn't turn out to be that way because whoever makes the contract is limited. Limited by their own agreement. Limited by the sacrifice they must make, which restricts their full and brilliant and radiant self. So think about it. Where in your life have you sacrificed for another? Your parents? Maybe siblings? Older or younger? Maybe mates? Maybe first marriages or the first important long-term relationship? You set up a pattern of sacrifice, you set up a pattern where you were finding someone who would step into that other side of your contract. Some people in relationships, in order to have a harmonious relationship, will go on what we call good behavior. Good behavior never lasts because it's in a facade that you put on in which you're nice, wonderful, warm, loving, generous, engaging, kind, considerate, deep, passionate, whatever it is, without acknowledging that underneath it all, you may at times really resent it, having to be nice and considerate. What if you want to be selfish for a while? Or maybe you're a person looking for someone to do a sacrificial contract with you. That you can just be irresponsible, you continue to play, to be the child, and find somebody else who will take over the onerous stuff you don't want to do. That you can make them feel inadequate about doing it, so they'll try harder to make them feel guilty that they're not serving you good enough, that they're not being good enough, that they're not spiritual enough, smart enough. You can take that role too. But what that does is it limits you as well. It limits you from allowing yourself to open to the vulnerability, to the depth, to the reality of yourself. To allow yourself to grow up emotionally, to be empowered and responsible. We're saying responsible is a good thing. Not to blame, not at fault, not that type, but a good thing to be responsible, to respond from an empowered place to your reality. So what side of the contract and the agreements were you? Were you the one that expected the sacrifice from the other? And what were you giving them in return? Your facade? The image? The harmony? You're going to be nice as long as they kowtow? Or were you the sacrificial lamb? The one that had to always tiptoe around and placate and calm down your partner? Or did you have agreements going back and forth? That can be quite confusing. It can be agreements that you made from your birth family, assuming that this dynamic is still viable in your adult relationships. You can bring it along. And then you can play out parent-child dynamics in your adult relationships. Messes stuff up. You can't have a real relationship as long as parent-child dynamics are going on, as long as the old psychic contracts from childhood or adolescence are still hanging in there. All you are doing is transferring your original agreement, quote-unquote, your original sacrifice, your original plan, from parent or first love or whatever, to the current person. That means that you're putting this other person in a slot. You're a substitute because you're continuing the psychic program, even though it didn't work for you before and it's still not going to work for you in the future. So it really behooves you, from a spiritual perspective, to be able to tap into your vulnerability, to your spiritual awakening. It requires opening, it requires receiving, which many people are scared of, because receiving reminds them of their childhood. They received some stuff, a lot of stuff. They had to receive. They couldn't survive. They couldn't do a lot of giving. That was the contract. I'll give to you. I'll be the good girl. I'll take care of everything. I'll be the helpmeet, the assistant, the helper. Or I'll be the good guy. I'll take care of everything. I'll fix everything. I'll support you in what you do. I'll take care of what you cannot. Where did you make yours? Where did you limit your own capacity to receive? Where did you limit your own ability to receive love? Where did you limit your value? Your self-acceptance? Where did you put on a facade? Where did you pretend to be someone else than who you are? So that you could get love, so that you could get approval, so that you could get attention? And where has it gotten you? It's gotten you stuck in your patterns. Now, admittedly, you probably have done a lot of work, cleared a lot of stuff. But sometimes there are these aggravating dynamics that just chain you, that bind you, that just, almost in a sense, create realities that force you back into that old pattern. Just as you think that you've taken care of everything, now comes along new problems that require you to do even more to take care of everything. Just when you thought that you had finally stopped annoying people, irritating people, that you could do all the right things and they'd be happy, then comes along somebody that just doesn't get you and can't be happy, and you start all over again. Some of those really sticky wickets, some of those really sticky patterns come from having made one or more agreements that this is what you were going to do in order to get the reality that you wanted, and that you were going to, initially you did this sacrifice out of love, out of appreciation, in order to have happiness and harmony. And so you can be puzzled when you fall back into the pattern, and not only does it not create harmony, but it creates more distress. And the reason for that is because when you grow up, your reality that is your friend, assumes that you want to clear these types of things to let go of these limitations on you, to let go of these perception blankets, to free yourself for self-realization and God-realization, to free yourself to be successful and happy, being you, without limits, without any limits other than your love, your responsibility, your empowerment, and your alignment with your divine plan. If you connect with the divine within you, you essentially step beyond the contract. But if you don't know that you have the contract, if you lose connection with that divine within you, it's not consistent 24/7 that you're in the ecstatic bliss of the divine. You can find yourself falling right back into seemingly old, immature emotional patterns and habits. That's what we want to help you break today. It gets anchored not just in your subconscious, means that it's repetitive. It's always an option that's there for you. But it gets anchored in your unconscious mind. It gets anchored in the collective because it's something you pick up when you're a child. And you think it's real. It's part of that perspective that you pick up from your parents and your social group, your culture, your race, your geography. You pick it up. And you think it's real. And you forget to ever reevaluate it. You can forever think of your identity as the child of so-and-so who comes from this family, who's a part of this culture or race or whatever, part of living in this particular social climate, in this particular geographical location. It's hard for you to break that. It's the collective. It's like it's always there as your foundation orientation. So what you want to do when you break a psychic contract is you must break your identity orientation that you built in childhood and never reevaluated or cleaned out. Maybe you rebelled against it, but that doesn't clean it out. The rebel doesn't clear anything. The rebel is just resisting what they think is. It's still reinforcing those old limited points of view and perspectives and orientations, but just fighting them. It just creates the conflict inside. It doesn't get rid of that. Why not? Let's get rid of that. Why not free yourself? And the way to free yourself is to free yourself of your old identification, to understand why you would create a psychic contract, to understand that it's coming from your point of view and not necessarily agreed upon psychically by the other person. It's all one-sided, really. It's your choice to do that. They have their stuff. Sometimes you find their contract and your contract is a really nice dovetail. Some people say, this is kismet. This is a real relationship that's going to work. No. It just means that your issues, overlap and blend correctly so that you're really going to get to work on your issue with that person. How many of you thought that relationships were going to be a wonderful experience of love and joy only to find that your issues come up over and over? Oh, darn, and they have issues. Darn. I was hoping they wouldn't have any issues. Then I wouldn't have to tiptoe around them. Darn. Well, why don't you get rid of yours and see what happens? Because if you're in a relationship with someone and you get rid of your contract, you look at that relationship with new eyes. You approach that relationship with greater freedom. You actually allow the other person to step out of their restriction too. It gives the opportunity for both of you to move to the next level, to grow up spiritually another notch. And when you don't look to that outer world, and this is perhaps the hardest part of this, to break that addiction to seeing your reality as telling you where you're at. Am I doing it right? Let me see. See if my reality is rewarding me or not. Seeing if they're being nice to me or not. Seeing if they love me or not. That'll tell me that I'm doing it right. No, that's a performance. You don't give your power away like that. What you must do is take your power back and recognize you're going to be happy with you. And if the other person can see who you really are and they're still unhappy with you, then you're going to have to renegotiate that relationship. Start over from scratch, renegotiate, rebuild. Even if you do that, and it appears at first to be a tremendous amount of work, but even if you do that, it offers the opportunity for them to be themselves as well. And you can discover something greater. Or at least you'll know that that other person absolutely refuses to be conscious, to be free, to be themselves. At least you don't spend years and years waiting. You can move on if you need to. You don't have to. Most of the time, the majority of the time, you can salvage tremendously what you have and turn it around. It just takes a shift in perspective. And to step into that new perspective, to claim it, to own it as being natural to you, and watch your reality shift. So in a short while, we're going to take you on a meditative journey to break a psychic contract. We would recommend that you choose one. You can find one, and it'd probably be the one that's kind of been in your face the most over the past few years, decades. The one that you always encounter. And if you don't think you have one, then look again. Are you telling yourself the truth? You'll need to be real here. Now, some of you may have already broken psychic contracts. Yay! When you go to higher levels of awareness and responsibility and maturity, you get the invitation to take them back, and some of you have done that. It just feels natural, and it just flows right back into the old groove. And after a while, you're scratching your head saying, how did I get here again? I broke that. Well, it is going to require certain awareness. And that's why we want you to think about what your contract is. What agreement did you make with yourself that you would do in order to create peace and harmony, safety, whatever you needed in your life to survive? Most of you did it in relationships. You can do it in social dynamics. You can do it in business as well. But it always tends to come back to childhood. So that's where we suggest you look. What adjustment did you always have to make? We knew one woman whose mother was emotionally disturbed and ill a great deal of her adolescence. She became the caretaker for her mother. In a sense, she didn't really have a fun adolescence at all. And her mother was hypersensitive and reactive and could just turn on a dime. So she began to be very, very cautious. She became the cautious placator. caretaker. Needless to say, what kind of men did she attract when she grew up? Immature men who needed to be caretaken, who were very intense, they could turn on a dime. They could be nice one moment, terrible the next, totally erratic. She had to be cautious, approach very, very cautiously and take care of them, placate them. So you can see it can take over your life if you don't realize there's another way. So what did you do? Did you choose to perform? Did you choose to sacrifice? What did you do? And we'll let you think about that a little bit while we take some questions. And then we'll get rid of that psychic agreement that you made inside yourself and free you. Put you in a place of personal awareness to where you don't have to fall back into that ever again. So, if you have a question, let's begin.
Hi, Galexis.
Oh, hello.
I'm pretty well versed with the psychic contract I made with my mother, that I would allow her to blame me and that I would take care of her. I am unclear on what psychic contract I made with my father that allowed in my teenage years for him to molest me. Whatever that was, because I am not at all clear on that.
What age were you?
12.
And it lasted just for a few months?
4 years.
4 years. Started at 12?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, one of those kinds of things, it's very similar in a sense to the one with your mother. But it's, of course, shifted in point of view. First of all, you didn't want to disturb, distress, or reject your father. You weren't particularly comfortable with this. And it had to be a secret, of course, yes?
Yes.
All right. To a certain extent, you're being vulnerable, you're being the prey, you being the victim, in a sense, was a gift you gave him.
Okay.
Okay? You gave him this gift saying, we'll have this secret between the two of us. Maybe you'll love me.
Mm.
Maybe you'll be happy. Maybe this will enable you to be more stable, more balanced, more secure. Now, you couldn't have really consciously seen it from that perspective.
No.
But if you look back on it from the perspective you have now, can you see how you did that?
Yes. And also,
it gave you an intimacy that you felt would benefit him and somehow or another would get you, you would still survive somehow.
Yes, I see that.
All right. So you sacrificed yourself for his benefit, supposedly, in this, the way the contract works,
mm-hmm.
the way the agreement works.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he didn't see that side of it. He didn't have he didn't fulfill the opposite side. He didn't know how to love you. And what he was doing really for him was having a sense of power. And so basically you were saying, I'm willing to give you my power. You see?
Yes.
Because if I give you my power, then it doesn't disrupt everything too much. Then somehow or another, you won't run away. It won't be a big whoop-de-doo in the house. somehow or another this will keep you from, you know, going over the deep end, whatever you might have perceived at the time. Mm-hmm. There is in the collective a whole thing about men and their sexual needs that many women fall prey to in their marriages or in their love life, in the sense that they feel that somehow or another they've got to satisfy this aspect of the man, that that's part of their role. It's an ancient kind of, you know, male chauvinistic system where the woman is, we call it the man code, where the man has to, you know, maintain his exterior at great cost to his interior self. And what has to happen is that the woman has to take care of the interior. The woman has to make the man happy, loved, secure, and so on, so the man can go out there, be the success in the world, be the, you know, be the money earner, et cetera, et cetera, in the old traditional kind of setup. But what it basically in there was said, that a woman's role, a female role, is to make sure that the man is satisfied. And this really is not about sex, as we said, it's about power. So essentially you gave up that part of you, the sensual, sexual part of you, for your father's power, so he would feel secure in his power. Okay?
I see that.
All right. So you may want to break that one.
Yeah.
So look at your life otherwise and see where you felt yourself obligated to make other people feel secure in their power and feel secure in their lives, even if it's at your expense. Have you noticed any of that?
Oh, yes. That's a pattern.
All right. So wouldn't it be fun to get rid of that one?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Duran.
Thank you.
Hi, Galexis.
Hello.
I'm not quite sure exactly how this ties in, but I know it does somehow. I have this vivid remembrance when I was 5 years old, of being in my bedroom and being feeling totally depressed and hiding under the cover. You know, I was had all the blankets pulled up over me, and I had this vision of that was myself. I was seeing myself as this stick figure kind of lying on a beach. And I had this vivid remembrance that this girl, a stick figure, had committed suicide. And there were all these, and it was actually like a picture with seagulls flying over and everything. And what I did was, when I was in the middle of that experience, I remember thrusting my right arm right up out of the covers and swearing, and the intention that I made at 5 years old, and I remember the exact words, when I am okay, I will reach out and touch other people and make them feel better. I don't know exactly how this relates. I know I had a lot of, like we all did, a lot of turmoil during childhood. But there's something in that, and I'm sure I had contracts with both my parents. You know, I was kind of like ended up being kind of the good little girl until I was a teenager and all hell broke loose. But I just wondered if you have any, that remembrance is so vivid. It's almost like that intention helped keep me going on the planet somehow.
Yes, it did. Because
you know?
This was you. It was actually, that was an actual power statement on your part.
Yeah.
And it did. It enabled you to survive, to get past all the craziness. That was what it was about. It was intended to help you survive because if you noticed, the condition was, when I am okay.
Yeah, it was exactly that.
This is a power choice. This is not a negative limiting contract per se. but it was an acknowledgement that in the meantime, you were having to do a whole bunch of stuff you didn't really want to do.
Yes.
And have to compromise a lot about who you are. But it showed your intention that ultimately you wanted to love and to lift others.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So by putting that, when I am okay, now, it was really absolutely a beautiful, powerful statement. And you were absolutely miserable at the time that came out of you. And that is a soul statement.
Yeah, it's like a part of me wanted to die. Just
well, that's that picture of the stick mm-hmm. figure committing suicide, that was the part of you that wanted to die.
Yeah.
So you visualized it very strongly. So that part of you that was sacrificing yourself, that was like exposed, that, you know, you were just, and you were not real, that you were not being real. That's a stick figure part.
Oh, okay.
You were not being your real self.
Right.
That self had to go. You see, that's a very high spiritual awareness for a five-year-old to bring into conscious reality.
Mm-hmm.
But it enabled you to hang on till you got on your spiritual path and found your way. So what you want to look at in that regard, because that's not really a contract,
right?
A limiting contract. It can be a limiting contract whenever you have decided. Look at your life. When did you decide that you were okay? Did you ever decide that you were okay?
You know, it's just now that I'm feeling really that I'm really okay. It's been a long haul. And I mean, I did a lot of things.
Well, correct. But that's when your mission kicks in.
Mm-hmm.
When you're okay, then you can do this giving, and it will not deplete you and destroy you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you notice, look at what's happening in your life now. You're coming
right.
out.
Yes, definitely.
It's like you're blossoming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where most people think, hey, you got to blossom when you're in your teens and 20s, you know? No, here you are blossoming now.
Right.
Because this is a spiritual flowering.
And what I'm finding is there's people in my environment now that are going through all kinds of things that because I've been through these kind of things, I'm able to support. And
mm-hmm.
I feel, I don't know where I'm headed in terms of doing healing work or anything, but it feels like, yeah, I feel like I'm at that point.
Right, well, what we suggest is that you reevaluate this vow. This is a vow.
Mm-hmm.
Reevaluate your vow and define it from the mature person you are now. When I am okay, I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
I am a valuable being. I am a light being. I have value. I have, you know, significance. I am okay. All right? And you want to touch others. You want to help lift others, right?
Yes.
That was part of that vow.
And I've done, I mean, actually I did chiropractic work for a number of years, and I became very ill and couldn't do it anymore. You know?
Right, because...
all the old stuff caught up.
Well, because you didn't realize that you could do it from an orientation without sacrificing.
That's right.
So that's why we say you have to redefine it. You have to redefine what touching others and helping others, lifting others, whatever, what that means. You've got to define it in such a way that you can see yourself being able to do that at no loss to yourself.
Oh, that's true.
And that's critical.
Yes.
Because if you let yourself get sacrificed, which is what happened with the chiropractic work.
Yeah, it did.
You sacrificed yourself. And we know quite a few, you know, health people, health practitioners who are just so dedicated. But they need me. I got to do it for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, kill themselves through it. You know, they can destroy themselves. So from a mature spiritual place, let that okay be more than just physically able. Let that okay being value of you as a light being okay. You know, the I'm okay, you're okay?
Yes.
When you're really okay, you are okay. You're enough.
Mm-hmm.
You're good enough, you're light being enough, you're good enough. Now, What is touching others from that perspective? With no sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to give. What is giving without a sacrifice? You're going to have to redefine that.
Yes.
What is touching without denying yourself?
Mm-hmm.
You see? And as soon as you get that, your vow can then click back in its more powerful way, and you can be guided in a more beautiful, into a more beautiful future using that same vow.
Yeah.
You don't need to break the vow. You just have to redefine it. Okay?
Yes. Yes. And I'm now in the middle of it. I have some physical remnants that are coming out now, but I realize that it's healing that I'm going through.
Right.
No, it's
right.
Not something terrible.
And just be
just
very
me.
Aware in any interaction with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you putting your energy? Are you allowing yourself to be infused with energy? Are you allowing yourself to receive energy
mm-hmm.
from the divine? Mm-hmm. Because if you can receive energy from the divine, you can give it, you know, 24/7, and you won't be depleted. But you have to be in that high state.
Mm-hmm.
That's a kind of a Christ consciousness type of state.
Well, and coming here definitely helps that a lot.
Absolutely.
It's huge.
So all right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay.
Let's pass it on to Mark.
Hi, Alexis.
Hello.
I'm really, really getting a lot out of this, to say the least. Part of me I have a specific question, but the other part of me says perhaps you can tune into where whatever contract I need most to focus on.
Oh, you've got a list, huh?
I have a list. Yeah, I have a list. What if? By the way, I did have a quick question. Can you have a contract with mankind at the time you live in?
Yes, you can have a contract. That is a big collective contract. Sometimes it is a vow that you made
mm-hmm.
in another life that you're bringing into this one.
Okay.
But yes, you can make a contract. We knew a woman who made a contract for her whole country.
Mm.
And we had to have her break that one because you can't fulfill that one. If you have a whole contract for your people,
mm-hmm.
for your race, for your culture, you can't follow that one through.
Okay.
It's just too big. So, yes, you can have one for your country and so on. Now, unless you're planning on being president, which is the place where if you have an agreement that you want to do something great for your country,
mm-hmm.
then you're going to be doing something like that or being in politics or something.
Yeah.
Or producing films of awakening about, the nation or something like that.
Okay.
You see, you can do that kind of thing. But, again, you cannot deplete yourself while you're doing it.
I understand. The question I had, and I'll just go into it. I've had my entire life, just as far as I can remember, horrendous energy with my mother. It's like warfare. And my memory of my mother is the word no. That comes out of her mouth constantly, regardless of what it is, it's a no. No to me, no to everything I have that comes out of me, and I don't know what that's about, but I'd like to break that contract.
All right. Well, what did you do in response to that? See, that's what the contract
was, to recognize that the only way I could get her attention was to get her to say no, because there was no yes in her. At least I didn't feel that. So I thought, okay, a lot of no, extreme no is better than nothing.
All right, were you kind of bratty then?
How
did you
do
that?
I was very irritating. I used to, I saw my mother picking on my father a lot. So I would do whatever I had to do to divert her attention away from him.
Ah, it sounds like your contract is about protecting your father.
Right.
Hmm. Why? What is it that you? So you felt that you were willing to step in the line of fire and
right.
buffer between him. What did you see that you needed to protect in him? What did you need to save?
I just sensed a weakness in him, and I can't. Maybe somebody that is blindly loyal, perhaps. I'm not.
Your
really
father
sure.
was blindly loyal.
Oh yeah, he. I know. Yeah. he would, you know, blindly rush in and defend the defenseless and what have you at his own peril. But so I'm not sure if that's really it, but that's what I sense about him.
All right, well,
but there's probably more to it than I'm seeing.
So he wouldn't stand up for himself, but he'd stand up for other people.
He would stand up for himself,
okay,
except when it came to my mother. And then he would go along with whatever insanity she came up with.
And did you sense that he just kind of kowtowed for the sake of reducing conflict?
Kowtowed for the sake of not being rejected by her like he was by his own mother. That's what I sense. I could be wrong.
Okay, so you basically went to the line of fire.
My mother didn't even want to marry him. I mean, she flat out told him, and that wasn't good enough for him. So I guess she caved in.
Well, gosh, this is a head-scratcher for sure. Why would she do that? You know,
she wanted to get away from her mother. It was very domineering, so it was an easy out.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Toxic parents in two generations.
Oh, yeah.
It probably goes back several more generations.
I think it does.
I mean, that toxicity. And it's going to be up to you for the toxicity to end here.
Right.
No more, all right?
I'm all for it.
Okay, so you gave up. You gave up peace.
I gave up myself.
You gave up yourself. Yeah. You gave up peace in order to protect and defend your father's power.
Correct.
For your mother, with your mother. You also got in the line of fire so that your mother would pay attention to you, so that you would at least get some attention.
Yes, I did extreme things that she
just
didn't
couldn't
quite
stand.
Yes, exactly.
Right. You knew what she couldn't stand, right?
Yes, I did.
And you did it deliberately.
Correct.
To get her attention.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I still do it, actually.
All right.
In a different way, but I do. Right. I still do it to this day just to get her to come alive, because she's dead. She's always been dead.
How about letting her just be dead? How about giving her permission to be in her own stuff without you always trying to be the enabler?